All right. The next presentation we've been working on for a long time, but the guys were much too busy to accommodate us for obvious reasons. We were lucky, though, that Ron was able to tear himself away from rectifying his situation long enough to come down and talk to us about their tower collapse. Ron Visti has been a member of WEAU-TV Eau Claire since 1966, the year the 2,000-foot tower was built. He started in production, advanced to engineering in 1970. He's a graduate of Brown Institute in Minneapolis in 1960. He worked in radio as an announcer engineer in South Dakota and Platteville. He followed that with a stint in the Army in 1963, serving in the Signal Corps and Security Agency. For over 20 years, Ron has been an active SBE member, earning certification level of professional broadcast engineer. The motion picture industry has always held a fascination for Ron, and he was the owner-operator of a cinema in eastern Wisconsin. Ron has seen television evolve from black and white to color to stereo and now to digital. He has just completed work on the launch of local origination in high definition at WEAU-TV. Ron Visti.
Well, this is kind of new to me, but previous presentation had some good points, things that we should probably take at heart. One is preparation. One of the things, first of all, in preparation is to have a plan. We didn't have a plan, but we had talked about a plan. What if the tower would collapse, if the studio was a problem, whatever. What we did talk about was mainly getting on the air as fast as possible. And I think probably that's the whole point, getting on the air as fast as possible. First of all, we'll start by looking at what happened. 1966, actually 65, the tower was started. And it took till spring of 66 before it was completed. Tower was, I'll give you a weight figure at this point, which we'll reference to later. 250 ton of steel. The facility is showing a transmitter building. The tower behind it is 2,000 feet, actually short by 2 feet. Who's counting? The tower also had a tenant, wax radio, and that was the extent of people using the tower. Served 27 counties in western Wisconsin. A total of 750,000 viewers, so we had quite a coverage area. Largest NBC coverage in actually anywhere. 8:30 that night, 6:30 weather should show you what happened that night. Anyway, on the 6 p.m. weather, we were seeing there was going to be a problem. In fact, that morning, the wax radio was at the tower and had an icing problem. So we knew that we were going to have a build-up.
WEAU 13 News starts now with a Skywarn 13 winter weather alert.
Today, and there could be much more on the way tonight as more snow could fall across the area. This is a live look right now from one of our live sky cams right here in Eau Claire. Good evening, and thanks for joining us tonight. I'm Chris Herzog. We have full team coverage of today's ongoing storm, starting right here in the Skyward 13 weather lab with Skyward 13 chief meteorologist Darren Meyer. And Darren, it's kind of a mess out there all day long.
Yeah, that's for sure. We had that light accumulation of snow and sleet earlier this morning, putting down a slushy coating of accumulation. A lot of on and off rain since then, but now we're starting to see some sleet again fall here in Eau Claire. Here's a look at our latest radar over the past 3 hours to see how that is really filling in here. Over the past 1 to 2 hours, some heavier precipitation down south of Eau Claire, tracking up towards the northeast. So this will continue to work on in. We have numerous winter storm warnings in effect. All the counties shaded in pink just north of Eau Claire. Winter weather advisories, including Eau Claire County and points to the southeast and west. And to the south, it's flooding that is going to continue to be a concern with flood watches and warnings, as we do expect up to another inch or so of rain in some of these areas. As far as this evening, well, we're already starting to see that sleet mix in. Temperatures just a few degrees above freezing right now. They'll continue to slowly drop. And by later this evening, as we approach midnight, the transition to snow will take place. And that means come tomorrow morning, Chris, we're talking about snow accumulation on the ground, which is going to need either the shovel or the blower. And it could be a lot in some places here in early spring.
It could be tough to get the blower on if it's that really, really wet snow. That stuff just not doesn't blow.
It's going to be a shovel, yeah. It's
going to be a backbreaker. Yeah. All right, thanks a lot, Darren. Judy?
Thanks, Chris. It may be spring now, but today's snow and sleet left a big wintry mess in the area. Jenny Yu continues our team coverage live on Hastings Way in Eau Claire. And Jenny, our snowplow is going to be out in the city tonight.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, Judy. Oh,
okay. At 8:30... Biggest Loser finals were on. We ended up being the Biggest Loser.
WEAU 13 News starts now with a breaking news alert.
It is a very busy night in the WEAU 13 newsroom. We are coming to you live via a web stream on our website, WEAU.com, because our 2,000-foot transmitting tower in Fairchild in Eau Claire County has collapsed. Many of you are watching your favorite NBC shows when the signal suddenly went black. As we've said, our tower has fallen to the ground. Right now, the circumstances surrounding the collapse are still unclear. It is a very windy and icy night out around western Wisconsin. For now, let's get straight to Skyline 13 chief meteorologist Darren Meyer with a first check of our forecast. Darren.
Thanks. We are looking at a pretty incredible storm affecting our area, not just the heavy rain, the snow, the ice. Also some lightning, some thunder snow occurring out there, a lot of dynamics in the atmosphere creating this storm system. Here's a look at our radar over the past 3 hours, and what we're seeing is a transition from rain and sleet to heavy wet snow from north to south. Our northern areas already seeing some heavy snow rapidly accumulating down to the south. You see the oranges and yellows and reds where some heavy rain, thunderstorms also impacting the area, working to the northeast. And we're looking at a lot of heavy precipitation in the coming hours as this storm continues to track off towards the east. Here's our look at our latest warnings, winter storm warnings in all the counties in pink, winter weather advisories in the purple shading. That goes until 7 p.m. tomorrow. These are the areas we expect the highest impact by heavier snowfall. Down to the south, it's flooding that's going to continue to be a concern, where we're seeing as much as a couple inches of rain from this system. From earlier today and also through tonight. So this is what you can expect. Overnight, snow will continue, some heavy accumulations, and through tomorrow morning, more snow to continue.
The evening was, as I said, at 8:30, I got the phone call after the chief was notified. He started on to the transmitter. And I went into the station because the operator says, no remote control, no generator, and nothing he could do could get anything back on the air. So I guess the next thing to do is to trot over and see what's going on. I think I was probably in the station no more than 5 minutes in the newsroom, and on the police scanner, the sheriff's department reported that the tower was across the road. We sent a news crew. Of course, as I said, Rob was on the way. So I gave him a call, and he was not quite at the transmitter site, but that required a stop on the side of the road. And we were both, I think, thinking the same thing. When I left the house, I tuned to Wax Radio. They were not on air. So with two or three different possibilities, I said to my wife just before I left, I think the tower's down. She said, well, you can't. What makes you think that? So I don't know, maybe it's sixth sense, but you kind of have a feeling.
About a mile from here, I got a phone call from Ron Visti at the station, the other engineer, and he informed me that the tower is down. The county called him and told him that. And it just basically made me sick to my stomach.
WEAU 13 News Chief Engineer Ron Wiedemeyer says when he was headed down here, he thought it might just be a power outage. But this was what he saw. Our 2,000-foot tower in eastern Eau Claire County on its side. The tower now only stands about 25 feet tall. About 8:30 last night when we went off the air, several pieces of equipment fell from the sky about 2,000 feet. This right here is the top of our tower. It sits at the tallest point, and that's what sends our signal out over the air and into your living room. The rest of it fell in about three different directions. One part of the tower is across County Road H and won't be cleared until sometime Wednesday. Firefighters on scene were concerned because a gas tank was leaking and there were live power lines down. The power was shut down and the gas was shut off without any incident.
No, there were no injuries. There's no homes around. There was no one around that I know of that even saw it come down. The only damage would be to TV 13 tower, the building here, and there's substantial tree damage from all the cables ripping around, but fortunate no one was hurt.
It's unclear exactly what caused the tower to collapse, but the weather last night was windy and icy. The tower in Fairchild was contracted back in 1966. It was one of the tallest structures in the country, and up to this point, it's held strong through the worst Wisconsin weather.
This is our local landmark, and I know everybody's going to be sad to see it go.
In Fairchild, Chris Baylor, WEAU 13 News.
Wow, what a mess. Took your line. One of the things when this happens, as I said, we didn't have a plan, but in a way we did have a plan. One of the first things we thought to do was to contact the cable system and see what could be done about that. I didn't have the phone number to be able to do that, but Todd Schernitz of QOW, I knew he would probably have that information. So in contacting him, I told him about the tower, and of course he called his station, got a hold of the phone number for the head end at Charter Cable and awoke him from a deep sleep. Found out later he goes to work at 3 a.m, so I got him in the middle of the night. And difficult for him to comprehend what happened. Took a while for it to sink in. He told me who to call, which I would do in the morning, and I thought that was the end of it. Also called a chief at WKBT and told him about it just because we're friends and let him know. They in turn put a news crawl on. So we got the information out. That was kind of my purpose. And also extend courtesy to fellow broadcasters. So one other thing. Normally, we supply news for Fox News and La Crosse. That is fed on a subcarrier. No subcarrier. So come 9 o'clock, when they go to hit the news, it's just a blank screen. This happened at 8:30. So they were in the dark. It took them a little while to get organized. One of the things we did was to use the website. As you probably noticed, 10 o'clock was done from the web. I can think back a number of years, but 10 years ago, before digital, think about what you would have done. No backup, no way to inform your public. Radio, you could probably get the information out. Other television stations, well, now you have a website that is easily accessed. We have streaming besides, so what a world. This was the next day. You notice many of the members are twisted. In fact, I think the only things that really survived were the antennas. Of course, not reusable, but they look like antennas. The action that happened that night must have been violent. One of the neighbors, roughly a mile and a half away, said he heard a swishing sound. Could have been any number of things, but after that, it was a shaking and the lights flicker. In Fairchild alone, 6 miles away, they felt the earth shake. And you can imagine what 250 ton hitting earth and somewhat sinking would feel like in an area maybe even a few miles away. So it's a lot of stuff coming down. One of the things that was curious about it is all the guy wires were attached. So what was swishing, it was probably the action, who knows. Insurance was, as far as this next morning, conference calls from engineers, managers, whatever. Insurance was involved from the very beginning. Very wise idea, because they're probably going to pay your whole bill, hopefully. We had a deductible like Rick was talking about, but overall, you're talking about millions here, so you better hope you have insurance involved. The next thing to consider along that line would be security. In this case, security was kind of an afterthought. We didn't get anybody on premises for a couple days, and that's probably something that you should get in sooner, because you get a lot of local gawkers. In this case, it was one person referred to it like a wake. People in the community have used this tower for guidance. Deer hunters, when they get lost, always had a place to refer to. And that next day, people were stunned because they felt they lost a friend. So security with all this tangled mess is probably pretty important. So get that out soon. The director of engineering was obviously one of the first ones on calls, and decisions after decisions, what to do, what alternatives. So one of the things that I thought I did that was probably the correct thing to do was to get the cable part started. A good alternative, because you do have a pretty good number of people on cable. And the next morning, like I said, the charter was contacted. Unknown to us, the engineer at the head end took it upon himself to follow through. And he, in turn, called the charter engineer who in turn called the fiber engineer. And by 8:30 in the morning, they had worked out a plan and had a crew on site. They were installing a fiber to connect to the studio, roughly a four block away, but we were never connected to the head end. So our hats off to Charter Cable for their quick efforts in getting us back into the system. Also, another thing discussed at the conference calls were what stations, whatever, people were volunteering one thing after another. Quincy Broadcast came up with an idea to use their sub-channel, second sub-channel, for our retransmission. It was a simple thing to do, but of course the logistics worked out. And it ended up by 10 o'clock in the morning, I was given authority to point the microwave to their receive site. They in turn would pick it up, put it on their 18.3. So we were back on the air. The cable company still didn't have a connection, but they were working on an HD connection. And the next thing was to get the cable back on the air. They were able to pick up 18.3. So we had the SD version on the air by roughly 10 o'clock in the morning with 18.3. Charter had remapped their system to put us on our normal channel. So that was in process. The next thing was to think about high definition. So for high definition, with Charter working on fiber, the engineer in Janesville, when we talked to him at 8:30, told us about the fiber going in, what he was going to do. It included picking up a fiber encoder from Janesville, where he happened to be at the time, works out of Eau Claire. And he was going to bring that back. He'd be back on Thursday. By Thursday afternoon, Charter was back in the building, had the fiber was all installed, put the encoder in. I put an ASI signal to him, and we had high definition on the cable. So the high definition now is on 18.3, because another line was set up to feed their studio by the fiber that they just put in. And in the process of talking about this with Quincy in Quincy, Harris had been planning to show the Quincy Broadcast Group a new encoder, two high definition channels and one SD. When they found out we were off, perfect application. So Harris proceeded to get this equipment up to us. That night, a crew came up from Quincy. That would be Thursday night. Friday, they installed the new Selenio two-channel HD, connected with the fiber that was just put in from our studio to their studio. And by Saturday, we were on 18.3 as high definition. So cable at high definition Thursday, over-the-air high definition on Saturday. Didn't work quite right. We had it shut down for a while. But Saturday night, we had the prime time was high definition. And had another little hitch at about 10:30 that we had a DA go back. But since that time, we've been running this system, and it's worked flawlessly. In fact, I think it was replacing a plexicoder, if you know what they are, from Harris. And the resulting picture from the Selenial was really no comparison. So, I'm probably not looking at that one. This is looking down the guy wire path, and you do see a lot of wires. You do see quite a bit of snow had accumulated. That was slushy, wet stuff, and probably 4 or 5 days later, it was pretty much gone. But not all the ice. In fact, Chief Engineer Wiedemeyer found a big block of ice down in the woods roughly a week or two later. It hadn't changed any, and it was something like 8 or 10 inches heavy. So that tower had a big load. Cracked the flange on the leg right off. What we found peculiar is roughly 6 legs. One went through the building of the transmitter. The leg was stripped of everything connected to it. Bolts were missing, and we figured from the color band, whatever, that probably came from the 1,000 foot level. And if you just start putting two and together, maybe that was some place where the tower gave out after so much height, so much weight above it. But there's no real determination except it's weather related. We had an easterly wind, and we had cold temperatures. That tower must have had a load of ice on the west side because of those conditions. Perfect storm, I guess you could call it. So anyway, we're back in the air. We have, you don't realize how many cable systems are involved in, if you went through the digital conversion, maybe you do know. This is just like the digital conversion all over again. Phone call to cable companies and they calling us, and it was a matter of even with email. If you were sending an email to the chief, you probably still don't have an answer because he's been going through emails. You answer one, and you probably have 10 or a dozen more waiting for you. So it was not a catch-up game. But as we moved on, you can see we had we did have a mess. I'm going to take you soon to what we're doing now and some pictures from what it was and what we have. The one thing to mention here is kind of make a to-do list. Obviously, the first thing to do is to plan your attack, contact your the management has to get together and decide what to do. Over a period of several days, in our case, we decided to rebuild, decided to see if we could get a UHF channel. We weren't having a lot of success with VHF, mainly because we could not increase power beyond the limits of current standard, which was 30K, because of the conflict in Rockford. So we were kind of stuck, and having had some problems with reception in Eau Claire, decided too that maybe we should do the UHF route. Our original UHF channel was 39. In fact, one of the antennas you saw was the channel 39 antenna. We found out that channel 38 was available and requested that. After some time, it was approved. In fact, we ended up being, I think, the last approval before the freeze. And that is, of course, the direction that we've taken. One of the things to do is, like I mentioned, conference calls, insurance. Make sure they're one of the first ones on your list. We also should add to this probably the fact that keeping others in the loop, like I said, I call the other local broadcasters. I think, first of all, it's a good courtesy thing, but it's beneficial, and of course it also alerts their news department to do something. And we have high regards for what everybody has done. So we went through the replacement. One other thing we should do is make use of your website. I mentioned that before. It's just sitting there. Use it for what you can. And our news department is doing a lot with that website. And we're, at this time, also keeping up with the new tower and what we are doing with that. Social media, your Twitters, whatever, different employees are using them as communication with the public. We found out from the emails, everybody wants to help. And I think you should accept that. At least see whether it's talk. Emails themselves are, it fills the bin in no time at all. And we've heard from people from all over the country, many of them past employees that were curious about it. One from Hawaii that used to work for us had put in comments and it's a good morale builder. I know you have no control over that, but read your emails to keep you going. One of the other things for informing is, in our case, of course, FCC, but we also let Washington attorney take care of that. We as far as the FAA, as long as you keep your tower, rebuilding the request the same, in other words, stick to everything the same, you're in good shape. Local government, we happen to be in a county forest, so the greatest part of the population is deer, and next we have a few neighbors, but they're fortunate, spread out quite a bit, so this did not affect them, but you do have to keep everybody informed. As far as informing, one other thing is have your manager or somebody else kind of keep the people in your employ informed, and those that are working with you, from tower people to whatever, put out a daily newsletter, an email, to just keep everybody informed. We're in that business of informing people, so let's not forget that's our job. Moving on to the new tower, we are working with the tower manufacturer on putting a video together, so fortunately we have a few more pictures than most people probably would have. But this shows in the factory where they're fabricating our new tower, and everything from legs to galvanizing. They're working with 30-foot sections. The sections themselves, when they're assembled, which they do in the factory, and then mark them for what sections they are, then disassemble them for shipment. So when they get on her site, everything's in pieces. It's a big erector set. Cabling. Every cable is made specific to the height and location, because everyone's going to be just a little bit different. Guy wire distances are different. And that's how they make that. The staging area. It's kind of like a big circus. The cabling comes in on big spools. Each one represents a cable for guy wire. I showed you the stub when it was manufactured, the first item that was put together. You'll see a little bit later how it was completely fabricated. But it sits on this one little pin that holds it from sliding. And what was kind of neat is they put a penny with the current year, so you had to find a vintage penny. That goes on the top of the pin, so when the tower goes over, there's your cornerstone. That's ingenious. Anchor point, before it was filled with the concrete. And a few assembled sections. You'll see here where I told you that one of the legs came down on the tower, on the transmitter building. That happened to be the control room. Didn't hit anything. So everything in the building was intact, except it had water damage because it opened the ceiling. And that one member was one of those six that came down with everything stripped. It took the generators just off to the right, that where it's green. It did a number on the generator, restroom, and the roof. So we were fortunate that most of the building was intact. It's now looks like that. This is that room that the member came down in. That's what it looks like today. This is the transmitter room. We moved everything back to Eau Claire, where we've been transmitting since July 11th. So we thought it was unusual to see an empty control room, but that's been filled up with transmitter parts. Little room to get around. This is just half of it. I mentioned that it was UHF. This is the new pattern. It was made this way because of mobile, keeping in mind that with mobile here, the optimum is to have horizontal and vertical polarity, which that is the vertical of it. And the vertical is designed to pretty much hit the interstate. So you backed up. Is to Interstate 94 going up to Minneapolis, and you have 29 going off to Green Bay, and 53 going up to Duluth Superior up here. So it was kind of orientated to give maximum for the interstate. We'll see how this works. The tower is due to be finished the end of November. A super fast track, considering that contracts were let June 2nd. So we'll see if this comes up. Told you about the penny. That's the base of the tower. That first section is, I don't recall the length, but it's smaller compared to the regular section is 30 feet. They built a 110-foot piece on the ground, took a crane, lifted that. So they guided 110 feet, built the rest of it to come up to the 200-foot
level. This is where the tallest structure in Wisconsin and one of the tallest broadcasting towers in the U.S. will soon sit.
We did put a 2011 penny under this tower so that if it ever falls down again, we know when it was built.
On site today, cranes helped slowly lift the first 110-foot piece and set it in place. Temporary wires now hold it secure.
Every move we make, every time we go to a different guy level, we straighten it out and make sure the tensions are correct, and you have to keep it that way all the way up.
This tower has a brand new design. It sits at one point at the bottom instead of three like our old one did. It's a lot stronger and heavier, weighing in at about 90,000 pounds.
The standards are more stringent, and so this is going to be a lot stronger tower.
An ice snow mix took the original 2,000-foot tower down back on March 22nd. Since then, plans to make today happen have been in full swing.
It's been a long time coming, and we're very anxious to get everything back on the airport.
With crews working 7 days a week, building higher and higher, the new almost 2,000-foot tower should be complete by mid-November.
Got to hope for some real good weather now so that we can continue the process, but today is an exciting start to it.
From here, piece by piece, heavy steel will be stacked up, replacing a Fairchild landmark and getting us back on the air for all of our viewers.
We're looking forward to a long time with this tower.
In Fairchild, Megan Peterson, WEAU 13 News.
Okay. Any questions? I do want to point out that I kind of neglected Wax Radio was on the tower as a tenant. And if you see Bill around, he might fill you in on how fast they got back on air, but this happened on Tuesday night, and I think you were back on Tuesday of the next week, right, Bill?
Ron, who's building your tower for you? Who's the manufacturer? Who's the erection crew?
Manufacturer?
Yeah.
It was stainless, is stainless. The antenna system is ERI for television as well as radio. Radio is putting two antennas, one main and a back. Gordon?
I was just wondering what happened to that generator. Were you able to save it or did it get scrapped or what?
It's being rebuilt. I don't know the status on it. We expect it back probably pretty soon. I haven't heard anything. Check into that. It is expected to be back on site. Probably a little difficult to bring in now with all the construction, but it'll be living a new life.
Ron, you said the original tower is 250-ton, and then you told me what the new tower was.
500, about twice the weight.
500-ton.
7.5-inch bottom legs and 10-foot face.
10-foot face, that's the question I had, so it's much more substantial.
Yeah.
Did you have to dig out the old guy anchor points to put the new ones in? And how much problem did you have, if any, with the local building and zoning board?
I didn't get the last question, but the first question was, Gordon, they reviewed the current anchors and also the base, and we ended up on the base part using the original pilings that were there as pilings, the three legs of the tower, and then they built a, I don't know if it's a circle now or if it's a triangle.
Looked like a square.
But that's on top, so you have a good base. And then as far as the anchors, everything's new. But we went from 3 to 2 as far as anchors per, or 3 to 2 anchor points per lane.
And what about the building and zoning board? I suspected, did you have any difficulties with them in getting
everything,
this?
That's why I was alluding to as far as county and letting everybody know. Everybody said, well, you're rebuilding it, right? And you're rebuilding it to the same specs? we don't have a problem with it. It went through with flying colors, and I don't, usually you expect horror stories about those things. But this one worked, whether it worked for everybody. But I think the whole secret is you don't change anything. If you build it, same location, same specs, all that kind of thing, and that's the direction we set out from the beginning, I think you'd be in good shape. And I do want to make mention, particularly Charter Cable. I used to have other things to say, and now I feel good about it. In addition, Harris, they've fallen over backwards. They sent crews up to remove the transmitter. Obviously, these things are paid for, but to get such a quick response on all this stuff, I say paid for, most of it's coming out of insurance, but to have such quick action really makes you feel good. And special thanks to Quincy Broadcast releasing their sub-channel, and they also offered a repeater in La Crosse, but that was only on for a few hours because it repeats the Rochester station, and some of the people in La Crosse wanted to have that back, so that went away. But then we're also on WLAX in La Crosse on their sub-channel. Actually, we probably could say at the very beginning, with us being on at 10 o'clock in the morning, as far as the advertisers are concerned, it should not have affected them. And now, even with us being on WLAX, we probably have increased from 100% to 110% the coverage area that we used to have. We lost them to the north because we can't deliver it to the north. So you balance that out. So we have a lot of people that are still waiting for the big tower. So we'll see when that comes. But they say November 30th. We'll see what happens. I thank you very much.